65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Brian Noonan, how are you this morning?
Oh, it's been a day. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
Already.
Are we going to leave it there?
No, listen, everybody knows, I've talked about when I had my surgery on my toe, and I was supposed to be out of a boot 2.5 weeks ago, and things were not progressing as the doctor had liked, so we said, well, we'll give it 2 more weeks, and then we'll see. So today I found out things actually got worse, so I'm having another surgery before Christmas. Yes. Oh,
so you clearly have not been good this year, because that feels like coal in your stocking.
This is a huge boot full of coal, and I will be wearing the boot into the new year. Very exciting. I love it, and this was the best part. Without going into a lot of details, they put some staples in. The staples are not holding. So he thinks maybe there might be a little infection in there, even though I've basically been on antibiotics since October.
Mike, that can't be good for your liver.
Probably. Well, listen, if that's what's going to do my liver in, then I haven't been working hard enough.
Touche, Brian.
So he said, we're going to go in and we're going to take the staples out and then we're going to do a little culture. And if there's no infection, then we're going to put a screw in there. If there is any slight infection, we're just going to leave it and your toe will be wobbly, but it'll be okay.
What does that mean, wobbly? Is it like there's going to like be no bone in the toe?
There's bone, but the bone at the, like, you know where the last knuckle is on your big toe, right?
Yeah.
There will be nothing connecting those. So I'll have the bone up front and the bone behind. So like right now when I wiggle my toe a little, it almost looks like a cat toy on the end of a stick where you can get the tail going really fast both ways. It's kind of like that. And I asked if it was going to affect my wearing of flip-flops in the summer, even though I don't really wear flip-flops. Okay. I just needed to lighten the mood for a minute. And he said, no, I could still wear flip-flops, so maybe I bring that back next summer.
But do other people want you to wear flip-flops? I think that's always the question.
No, and I don't want to wear flip-flops. Listen, you guys know I've had 6 of my 10 toes worked on. You think I want to be sporting those things out in public?
Showing them off? Maybe I'll get you a pedicure for Christmas to use for next year once this is all said and done.
Oh, I don't know. So that was my morning. That's why I'm remote today. But as you can tell, my home studio is now festooned with Christmas decorations.
It is.
So I'm trying to cheer myself up.
Word.
I love to festoon things.
All right. Well, coming up today, another very fun show. So I missed this news last year, but a year ago, one of the oldest churches in Madison, St. John's Lutheran, made an announcement that they were voluntarily demolishing their current church.
Yeah.
In order to build 130 low-income apartment units, which is very Christ-like.
That is Christian.
That
right
is
there.
Christian-like. And so we are going to talk to Reverend Peter Beeson, who's the lead pastor at St. John's Lutheran, to hear how it's going. Because this announcement was a year ago. They're still fundraising, hearing updates on the project, hearing on what the community response has been like. So that's coming up at 1:35. And then a certain Wisconsin billionaire lady has made Forbes' most powerful women list. Which one is it? Can you guess? Give us a guess. 855-616-1620. Whom do you think made the list out of the powerful women in Wisconsin?
Is she looking to take on a hobbled old radio host?
I doubt it.
All right. Well, then I'll still guess because it's still exciting. After 2 o'clock, of course, we will spin the state. And then this is something I didn't even know was possible. We all know about dog adoption and pet adoption. We know that all the shelters are crowded. Everybody needs help. Yeah. There is a segment of pets that even needs your help more. Neonatal pets. So we're going to find out, because I was under the impression that you couldn't adopt an animal till they were at least 8 weeks old.
I thought the same thing. So we're going to find out. We're going to get to the bottom of it as far as how and who is equipped to take care of such vulnerable animals.
I had a hard enough time with a two-month-old dog. I can't imagine a neonatal.
Yeah.
But Jack's Playground Animal Rescue is going to join us and explain their big event that's coming up. Then Debbie Lazaga is going to tell us about connected and automated vehicles. And I will mansplain a latest study about mansplaining here in Milwaukee and Wisconsin, because I know the ladies on the show probably won't understand the numbers.
All right, but first, we have a pretty serious topic to start the show with. We've covered it a lot on this show, but if you've been reading the news at all or following the news at all this year in Wisconsin, it's been marked, I would say, by a lot of distressing stories about Wisconsin's prisons and our Department of Corrections. I mean, if you just list through things off the top of my head, the deteriorating prison conditions at Green Bay and Waupun, ongoing staff shortages, litigation surrounding extended lockdowns, criminal charges against Waupun prison officials, inmate deaths, which is I probably should have led with, the not-so-surprising resignation of Kevin Carr, who was the secretary of Wisconsin's DOC back in March. And now there's been the fact that Lincoln Hills Youth Prison is still not shut down. It was voted on back in 2018 for them to close it, and there's a lot of finger pointing back and forth as far as why it's still not, but it's still open. There is a dwindling number, but still juveniles being held at Lincoln Hills Youth Prison, and the astronomical number that the Department of Corrections is asking per child for next year's budget is—I bet you couldn't guess how much they're asking for. And so go ahead, Brian.
No, it is a ridiculous, ridiculous number.
So when we come back, we're going to get to more on that story from the reporter who's brought us most of these stories this year, investigative journalist with Wisconsin Watch, Mario Caron, will be with us to let us know what is happening with Lincoln Hills. Stay with us on Spanning the State.
It is Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And 2024 may go down as one of the more distressing years of news when it comes to Wisconsin's prisons and our Department of Corrections. There's been prison conditions, staff shortages, inmate deaths, charges against prison officials. There's been a lot happening. And Mario Caron has been one of the people who has covered this. And his latest report is talking about the ballooning costs of Lincoln Hills, the youth prison in the Milwaukee area that was supposed to close a while ago, but yet is not only not closed, but it is increasing, it seems like, its budget. So here to talk us through this story, welcome back to the show, Mario.
Great. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start with the background of Lincoln Hills. Like I said, the legislature voted to close Lincoln Hills 6 years ago. Why is it still open?
Yeah, so this plan to move forward on closing it has been held up for a number of reasons. One among them is Governor Evers did delay in closing the facility until another one could be built, another youth prison closer to Milwaukee, where most of the teens who attend Lincoln Hills come from. So that has been part of it. The other has been held up just through partisan gridlock and blocked funding, part of lawmakers. So there's really, this has really just hit a standstill. And in the meantime, the costs continue to just rise exponentially. And as you alluded to, the costs are now, sky high. We're paying, $1,268 a day to incarcerate one teen, at the facility, and meanwhile, the plans to close it are just inching forward at a snail's pace.
Now, Mario, Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake are the state's only youth prisons, but there are different facilities that house young people convicted of serious juvenile offenses. What are those, and how are they treated differently than, say, Lincoln Hills or Copper Lake?
Right. So, as you mentioned, Lincoln Hills, Copper Lake are the state's only two youth prisons. However, there are a couple other facilities that house youth convicted of serious crimes. Mendota Mental Health over in Madison serves kids teens who have, you know, been adjudicated and been involved in the juvenile justice system, but have significant mental health needs. And there's also something called Grow Academy, which is more of an alternative to incarceration. You know, setting those facilities aside, there are also a number of regional sort of smaller centers that are operated by counties where some kids are sent when they were to follow the law.
So do they operate differently? Do they have a similar, like, request for how much it costs to have juveniles at these other facilities? Because the ticket price right now is $463,000 a year for incarcerated juveniles at Lincoln Hills. Is that normal?
Yeah, so that's where this it gets confusing and it took some time to sort out. Those main youth prisons, so Copper Lake, Lincoln Hills, Mendota, and Grow Academy, all share the same sort of price tag.
Okay.
The costs are set for all of them. And there are a number of reasons why that price tag has gone up. But yes, they all factor into that single, $1,268 a day. They're all reimbursed at that same rate.
And so is that normal compared to other states? Sorry, Brian.
It is. So a couple of years ago, the costs were not what they were. They were about a fraction. So this is around 2020. There was a report done, the national report, that showed Wisconsin at the time was kind of middle of the road, if not spending a little bit less than the national average. But, costs have changed since then. So, if we are to spend the $862,000 next year, which the Department of Corrections is asking for, that would really put Wisconsin near the top of the list in terms of spending on youth incarceration.
You mentioned that the costs had gone up and there were different reasons. What are some of those reasons and why would Wisconsin be so much higher than other places if it goes through next year, like you said?
Yeah, so some of the reasons are there. Part of it comes down to simple math. So as problems have been coming to, problems have been featured in the headlines and, there's been high profile problems, abuses from staff to students. As those problems have come to light, judges have become more reluctant to send kids to Lincoln Hills. It's as costs have gone up, that's further added to the hesitancy to send them, and the population has just kind of dwindled. So this is a facility that was built for more than 500 teens, and now it's serving about 40 boys and 18 girls. So it's really just a fraction. It's an underutilized facility. But the state still has to pay the fixed costs, so heating, staffing, things that don't change just because fewer students are going, so that raises the per capita cost. As fewer students go, essentially it becomes more expensive for the kids who do stay there.
Is it also dwindling, or the facilities that we talked about that are closer to Madison, are they also way lower than capacity?
So there are facilities closer to the state's population center, and those programs typically accept much fewer students, and there is a backlog and sort of a wait list at some of them to get into some of those facilities. So there's sort of a backlog at the smaller youth facilities, but just a quite a bit of room at the largest facility in Lincoln Hills.
So what are we looking at to try to change this as far going forward?
So, I have not noticed a lot of urgency to, let me backtrack. In my conversations with lawmakers, with Governor Evers' office, I have not detected a lot of urgency based on this number. It seems like it's almost expected or par for the course. My point being that the costs alone don't seem to be a huge motivating factor to move forward and get this closed. But, moving forward, eventually we're going to close this facility. Not sure if that will happen in the near future. I don't know if anybody knows when exactly that will happen. But once Lincoln Hills closed, it could change the costs. At the same time, you know, we're opening smaller facilities at the same time we're trying to close Lincoln Hills. So there's really no indication of whether this will become any cheaper moving forward.
Well, it's a big number. It is a really big number, especially because how much do we spend per student when it comes to school, like K through 12 students?
Yeah, so we spend $14,000, just over $14,000 as a state to send a kid to a typical K-12 school. So if we're looking at the number next year for $862,000, that's 58 times what we spend on the average K-12 public student, which is a whopping figure.
That's a big, big number. All right, Mario Caron, thank you so much, as always, for joining us today.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Thanks,
he is an investigative reporter for Wisconsin Watch. We will have more after this on Spanning the State.
Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
I am Kristen Bry, and at least we got the feel bad story out of the way, right, Brian? I think everything else for the rest of the show is a little bit more uplifting.
Uplifting, definitely, especially right after the news. This is going to be, if you don't feel good about this story, especially when everybody is running around spouting off that they're Christians, and sometimes, let's be honest, we don't always act that way. This story. Somebody's putting their money where their mouth is, quite literally.
Quite literally. And so we are talking to, when we come back after the news, we are talking to Reverend Peter Beeson, who is the lead pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church, which is demolishing itself in order to make way for more affordable housing in Madison. So I'm very much looking forward to hearing how that project's going after ABC News and local headlines.
I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And welcome back to Spanning the State. So almost a year ago, it was announced that one of Madison's oldest churches, St. John's Lutheran, built in 1856 at the corner of East Washington and Hancock, was voluntarily demolishing its current space in order to build 130 low-income apartment units. So a year later, we wanted to check in and hear how the project is going. So joining us on the phone now is Reverend Peter Beeson, who is the lead pastor at St. John's Lutheran Church. Welcome to the show, Reverend.
Thank you. It's good to be here with you both.
Absolutely. So I guess first, can you just tell us a little more history about St. John's?
Sure. So like you said, St. John's has been in the heart of Madison since 1856. The building currently on the corner of East Wash and Hancock has been there since 1905, with significant additions in the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s. But it's a German immigrant congregation. Our founders, back when Wisconsin was becoming a state, came over from Germany in hopes of a better life here. So a German-speaking group really focused on serving the needs of the neighborhood and the community. And that has shifted a lot, as you might imagine, over the course of the years. But that mission to still really serve the needs of the community is one of the core values of the congregation.
Well, what inspired this idea? Like Kristen said at the beginning, Reverend, this is voluntary. The church was not condemned. There were no building violations. You and the congregation just decided, we're going to tear this down and we're going to build affordable housing. Where does that idea come from, and how hard a sell was it to the congregation?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Like I said, St. John's has long had the value of really serving the needs of their community. And they, in the 40s, they built a gymnasium on the side of their building to be a place for youth in the neighborhood to come and play basketball. They started Oakwood Village, which is a major retirement center now in Madison, back when older folks who didn't have family didn't have a lot of resources and places to go. And shortly before I joined, they'd even turned over their entire lower level to other nonprofit groups in the community that were doing good. So we hosted the Porchlight Overnights Men's Shelter for free in our space for 20 years till that stopped with the pandemic. And then they founded Off the Square Club to deal with people with diagnosed mental illness. So there's this long, real history of putting our money where our mouth is and actually living our faith. So we were getting to a point where we needed to really think about what do we do with the building to steward it well. You know, so we were at that point of do we either invest more in a new boiler and new roof, or do we really consider what God is calling us to do? And the congregation had taken a series of site visits in the early 2000s to the East Coast and the West Coast to think about and observe what are other congregations in urban settings really doing to serve the needs of their community. And community, I mean broader community, the neighborhood outside of the congregation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And really do that well. So they did a series of site visits in the early 2000s. They had drawn up some, you know, much smaller plans, but they'd drawn up some plans back then to try to do something. And then the financial crash of 2008 sort of obliterated a lot of that dream, although that is when they renovated their upstairs space to add a gathering space upstairs and turned over the whole lower level to these other nonprofit groups that work with people dealing with poverty and homelessness. So that ethos was still there in the congregation. And then I have lived and grown up on the East and West Coast, seeing these gorgeous old church buildings turned into luxury condos. and while they're, you know, they're so architecturally stunning, which is beautiful, but they also lose all the missional good that space has had.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even like churches have done a lot of terrible things as a society, but churches are also the place where the Boy Scouts can come, the Girl Scouts can meet, the neighborhood group, the 12-step meetings, you know, even polling places and other free or very low-cost neighborhood space, the soup kitchen, you know, all those things that serve a tangible good in the neighborhood. So I sort of brought those dreams, and we were at a point where we really needed to think creatively about money, and we had what I call this Holy Spirit come to Jesus moment, where we said, what do we do? Like, we can stay here doing this, but it's, you know, doesn't seem like a great idea long term. It's continuing a downward trend. Or we can do something really bold and really audacious and really follow God. So we started talking. We talked to our alder, who was a great asset and resource. And we said, we have this wonderful real estate in the heart of downtown, walking distance to all sorts of jobs, cultural amenities, parks, the grocery stores, schools, you know, thriving, vibrant neighborhood. We have this space. We constantly hear through all of our other ministries, like the Emergency Fund, where we provide low-dollar financial assistance to people, that folks are spending 50, 60, 75% of their income on housing. And when people are spending that much on housing, some of it housing that is quite substandard, that means they don't have money to be able to change the tire on their car when it becomes flat. So they get laid off. All sorts of things many of us would just take for granted become these huge life-changing crises.
And Reverend, what was the reaction of the politicians that you talked to? And now that the word is out, the neighborhood is what are you getting as far as feedback from those groups?
So I will say our city and county have been amazing to work with. They've been incredibly supportive of this project. Same with our alder and the local politicians have been really supportive because they see this as a need. You know, we need housing in urban walkable areas, and the congregation is willing to do it. I also live in the neighborhood, so it's been really helpful to be able to walk to work and chat with neighbors informally and get their input. And that started 5.5 years ago, you know, asking people just very informally, hey, if we do something with this building, what do you think we should do? So that has been really helpful. And the neighborhood has been quite supportive. There's some reasonable concerns about, you know, impact on the Mifflin Street bike boulevard, parking impact, some of those things. But particularly for Madison, the neighborhood has really shown up and been really supportive of the project.
And so
we appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, unfortunately, we have about a minute or so left, but how much money have you raised so far, and how much money do you need to raise for the project?
So it's a $58 million project total. Our capital campaign goal is $3 million. We've raised a little under $1.5 million, and so we'd love to get up to $3 million, and that'll complete the goal.
And where can people get
people
more?
Yeah, if people hear this and they're like, I want to get involved, how can they get more information?
They can go to www.moreformadison.com and moreformadison.org.
Moreformadison.com, moreformadison.org. I just think this is incredible. And so, Reverend Peter Beeson, thank you so much for sharing the story with us, and good luck as you continue to fundraise.
Thank you both so much. Take care.
Thanks, Reverend.
All right, we will have more after this on Spanning the State.
Well, she's all you'd ever want. She's the kind I'd like to flaunt and take to dinner.
Oh, we rarely hear Tom Jones on Spanning the State, but I'm always for it. It is Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. All right, so at the beginning of the show, we asked you to guess whom you thought made Forbes' most powerful women list. The only clue was that she is a billionaire, and no one guessed it. So
no,
one from the 847, someone said, pretty sure Diane, meaning Diane Hendricks, is the only female billionaire in Wisconsin. Not true.
Somebody guessed the woman who owns ABC Building Supply.
That is, that's Diane Hendricks. Yeah, that's Diane Hendricks.
Oh, that's Diane Hendricks?
That's Diane Hendricks, okay. Yes. And then Miss U-Line, who we know is, we always hear the U-Lines when obviously sure. There's the company, the U-Lines, but it's also they are very big donors, as is Diane Hendricks, to political campaigns. And then we had one joke guess, maybe not a joke, maybe meant it. My guess for the new entry to the Forbes Most Powerful Women list is Vince Vitrano.
Yeah, well, listen, Vince is very powerful.
Vince, least his own mind. Just kidding, love you, Vince. All right, who it actually is, and I feel like she does fly under the radar, and so I'm not surprised no one guessed her, especially because we're in Southeast Wisconsin instead of in Madison. But it is Judy Faulkner, who is the founder and CEO of Epic Systems. And she, I mean, I think we all know Epic, but I feel like Judy is under the radar more than others. But the list evaluates the net worth, impact, and influence of women around the world to determine who the most powerful is. Do you know how much she's worth? Speaking of net worth.
I do because I am. I have the facts in front of me. But if I were to guess, let's say she's a billionaire, let's say $5.5 billion.
$7.7 billion. This is the even more shocking thing, because like that's a huge number. I can't even, it's like hard for to wrap my head around that number. But at $7.7 billion, what ranking do you think that gives her for richest person in the U.S.?
In the U.S.? Richest person, probably up in the 80s or 90s. She's not near the top at seven. It seems weird to say 7.7 billion.
Can't even crack the top 100. She's 154th.
Really?
There are 153 people in this country with more than $7.7 billion.
It's the 1% of the 1%?
Wow. Oh, yeah. So, but I mean, Epic is like, if you think about it, the Epic stores the medical records for more than 250 million patients in the U.S., which is a pretty, I can't do the fast math because I don't, at the top of my head, I don't know what the actual population is of the U.S., but that's a high percentage.
That's a lot of us.
Of the American population. But yeah, so
congratulations,
Judy.
Her basement.
But I was thinking about that. She started the Epic in her basement in 1979. And I think it's always funny to me because it's like, you know, Microsoft and Apple, both of those start in garages.
Yeah.
But I guess if you have a basement and
a garage.
But in Wisconsin, it doesn't surprise me it has to be in a basement, because if you're working on it all year round, you're not working in your garage in the winter. In Silicon Valley, maybe you could pull that off. But in Wisconsin, you're relegated to the basement.
We've all got. Now I'm going to look at my basement and go, why aren't you inspiring me to start some sort of billion-dollar business? It's just a depository for all my garbage.
So that you someday, too, can be on the 100 yes. most powerful women in the world, Brian.
Listen, there's so many jokes I could make there.
But we
don't
have the time. We got to go.
I don't have the time.
When we come back, we will spin around the state on Spanning the State.